This is roll number 1N, September 6th, Monday, and this is the Carter Rally.
Labor Day.
And it's Labor Day, and here's a reference to
beep.
Minus 7 dB. This is Wild Sound, guitar picking in crowd.
Make my resting place on that hill so high.
I love those hills of Virginia and those blue ridge hills on his road. When I die, won't you bury me on the mountain, far away in my blue ridge mountain home. Far away in my blue ridge mountain home.
All right, thank you all very much. Welcome to this. Welcome to the East Virginia Bluegrass Festival with special guest star Jimmy Carter. He'll be here in just a little while. So we're mighty proud to be invited here to play for such a on the turnpike, Harold Smith, doing a mighty fine job on that.
Jimmy Carter.
Carter Show.
You caught us in the middle of our program. We got moving. We're right on time. We have two great Democrats in Virginia who are known across the length and breadth of this state. And I'm going to ask them to come to the microphone together. And I'm going to flip a coin to see which one speaks first. Otherwise, I get killed. So I'm going to ask Henry and Andrew to come up, and we'll flip it. Oops. Call it, Henry.
I'm going to let Andy go first.
Henry's going to let Andy go first. The Attorney General of Virginia, Andrew Mello. Andrew?
Future President Carter, future Congressman Bob Quinn, Billy O'Brien, Bob Washington, future governors Andrew Miller and Henry Howell, may you end in a dead heat and serve as a blue and gold team for the greater glory of Virginia. Elected representatives of the state legislature and distinguished officials of the Democratic Party, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great thrill for me to be here today in this Tidewater area on Labor Day to participate in the kickoff of a great and exciting campaign. I've had the thrill of knowing that there are some items in common in my background with our future president. I had the opportunity to grow up in a small farming community. We all know that he has done that. To go to the Naval Academy, as did he. To serve in the Navy, as did he. Indeed, in his book, he pointed out that he had to make a decision as to whether or not he wanted to be Chief of Naval Operations or President of the United States. And I want to tell you, I certainly am glad that he chose the latter. Because if he hadn't, I certainly would never have become the former. What is happening all around these United States today, as the campaign begins down that final stretch, is typified by what we see here today. People from the rural areas who want to be heard and understood, people from the city areas who want to be heard and understood, people in the Tidewater area who know that although this great man who is going to be our next president came from another state and grew up in that rural background, that nevertheless, this Tidewater area represents a significant part of his life. We here know that that more than a decade that he served in the United States Navy has made him better able than many landlubbers to understand the needs of this great nation on the sea. It is from this background that he has been so much better able than the present incumbent to understand what has happened to our merchant marine and to understand what has happened to our United States Navy and the need to do something about both. His background here, where he began his married life and spent 2 years of the over decade of his Navy years, has qualified him to understand the problems of the shipbuilders at Newport News Shipbuilding and at the repair shipyard, Portsmouth Naval Shipyard, and to understand the problems related to the sea for fishermen, and to understand the problems related to the great energy crisis that we face and must deal with in part through this great seaport community. And above and beyond that, this community and thousands like it all around the United States understand today that in this man, we have a man of vision who recognized a long time before many the tragic vision of the future which occupies the White House and the State Department today. And the tragic view of the future that our do-nothing duo in the Senate, which one might enlarge with regard to the Capone difficulty to call the timid trio, since at least one congressman has failed to act. To understand the desperate importance of removing that tragic view of the future from Washington. The importance of recognizing that the time has come to put in the White House a man who understands the concerns of all Americans for over-centralization, for excessive paperwork, for the need to cut back on excess government control and to improve the capability of programs by reducing the excess of control and streamlining and providing efficiency. This great citizenry in this port area understand, perhaps better than most, what it is this man has set out to do, and it is therefore meet and proper that he is with us on this kickoff day. I proudly present to you the next President of the United States, Governor Jimmy Carter.
Thank you very much. is a good homecoming for me. 30 years ago, after being married for 4 days, I moved to Norfolk, Virginia. And I started my married life and I started my naval career here in this great community. Within 10 miles of here, some great things have happened. In the early 1600s, the first settlers came to our country, Jamestown. In the war between the states, close to here, we had the Battle of the Merrimack and the Monitor. We won't talk about who won. But as a Navy man, I know how important that great battle was, and it laid the groundwork for our future strong defense. And about 10 miles from here, too, my first son, Jack, was born. So we had three great things that happened right close to here. I was told by my staff when we planned this trip that we'd probably have a couple thousand people here. When I drove up the Secret Service, they had said they had 12,000. The chairman said we had 15,000. And it's an obviously great tribute to the Democratic Party and to me and to others here that you've come. I look forward next year to some great things. I look forward to having in the Congress some new men named Quinn, Washington, and O'Brien, and I hope you'll send them there with me. I look forward in the Senate to having a great man named Bud Zumwalt, and I hope you'll send him with me. And I look forward in the not-too-distant future to seeing Virginia elect another Democrat to be governor of your great state. Now, I know what it means, as you do, to have quiet, dormant, timid leadership in Washington, closely tied to the special interest groups, forgetting about the people. You've had a recent tragedy here near you with a Keep-On poison that's been spread throughout your waters. I understand there are several thousand, maybe 3,500 fishermen out of jobs. The land around the plant is still saturated with the poison. And what has your governor and what has Senator Byrd done about it? Absolutely nothing. Well, nobody knows the answer, but I guarantee you that if Andy Miller, if Henry Howell were in the governor's office, if Bud Zumwalt were in the U.S. Senate office, something would be done a long time ago about the Keep-On disaster. Today is my first day of the campaign, as you know. And I'm really glad to come back home to Virginia, where I might say even before I moved here, my own ancestors originated. His name was James Carter, the same as mine, and he moved down to Georgia in 1767. Now, why he left Virginia, I can't say. I'm not responsible for that. Everybody makes mistakes on occasion, but I've tried to come back to make it up. Let me say, I want to say this about my campaign. Your coming out today is a good omen for the future of our country. It's Labor Day, it's a holiday, and I know that you must think a lot about your nation. To come to a political rally and show me that you have concern about our country and about me and about the other candidates on the platform. I started this morning at 8:30 in Warm Springs, Georgia. My first speech of the campaign. In 1926, 50 years ago, Franklin Roosevelt, crippled with polio, purchased Warm Springs. He later built his home there, the little White House. He lived a lot of his life there. He worked there. He studied there. He prayed there. And he spent his final days there. In 1932, he was elected president, as you know. And he ran against an incumbent president, a man who had no vision, a man who was afraid, a man who said government can't do anything, it ought not to do anything, to put an end to unemployment, to joblessness, to inflation, to mismanagement, to despair, to hopelessness, and to a lack of vision. But Franklin Roosevelt presented himself to the American people, and he won. In 1960, just a month before John Kennedy came to Norfolk, he came to Georgia. Everybody told him on his staff, don't go to Georgia. It's a conservative state. Most of the people are Protestants. You can't do well in Georgia. But John Kennedy came to our state. He made one speech in Warm Springs. And John Kennedy said to the Georgia people, although I'm a Catholic, although I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, although I'm fairly liberal, I want to have your support because I have a great vision of what this country ought to be. I believe that it's time for our country to get moving once again. And when the returns came in, Americans have always been close to the special interests. I want to make a flat statement to you. I don't owe special interest a thing. And the other thing that hasn't changed is the character and the strength of the American people. So we need not be afraid of the future. We need a nationwide comprehensive health system for our people. We now spend $550 a year we're going to reorganize the executive branch of government and make it economical, efficient, manageable, and purposeful for a change. If I'm elected, I'm going to do it, and I want you to make these folks before you vote for them a promise to help me, and I'm sure they will. I don't have any doubt about that. The last